Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here on WPVC. I'm Rick Moore. And today with me, Josh Wheeler. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
Josh is the director of the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. I think I ask you this every year you're here. How do you fit that on one business card?
We it's very difficult. It doesn't leave much room for anything else.
You're not charged by the letter.
No. No, we're not.
Or you use the Arial font size 8. Josh is the director for the last 6 years. This is the center's been there 27 years.
The center has been around since 1990, but the Muzzle Awards have been around since 1992.
And that's what we're going to talk about today, the Muzzle Awards. The Muzzle Awards will be out on April 20th
yes.
of
this
2017.
Month. Yes, this month of it.
This show will be playing a few days before the awards. We're going to do a little history of the Muzzles. And hopefully I'm going to tire you out and see if we can get a little, just a little tweak. We don't know. We'll see what happens. You've been the director for 6 years. You've been with the center for 23 years.
That's correct.
So what got the center started on doing Muzzle Awards?
Well, that decision was before I became part of the center. I'd like to be able to take credit for it because the Muzzles are probably our most prominent and well-known program. But the center's mission is solely to protect the freedoms of freedom of speech and freedom of the press. Although our mission is focused, we pursue that mission in a whole variety of ways. We do get involved in litigation. We have a First Amendment practice clinic where students at the University of Virginia work for us and receive academic credit on actual cases involving the First Amendment. Typically, they're at the appellate level. But we also think that the most effective way to protect free speech is to try and instill in people a greater awareness of the importance of free speech and at the same time foster greater appreciation for it. And so we do a number of programs. They might be, educational programs. Outreach programs designed to make people think and aware of the First Amendment issues. One of those outreach programs, that might be a little more unusual, we built the free speech wall on the downtown monument, the giant chalkboard on which people can write. And if that there's ever been a program that's generated a lot of discussion and debate about free speech, that one's been a huge success. We do educational programs where we get together important people in the free speech world. We got, years ago, we got Jerry Falwell and Larry Flint on the same stage to discuss their famous case and their differences of opinion about free speech. But the Muzzles are sort of a unique way of bringing attention to free speech issues of the day. And these are awards, and put awards in air quotes, are awards for some of the more ridiculous or egregious affronts to free speech that, in our opinion, occurred in the past year. And this invariably gets us the greatest amount of attention.
Well, so let's go back in time. You've got your computer. I have mine here. And I want to go back to the first year, and I'm going to bring these up somewhat slowly so you can do any typing that you may need. 1992. Actually, in 1992, you only gave out five awards.
I think five, yeah.
My favorite is the way to phrase these, but the one that caught my attention the most in 1992, the Textbook Committee of the Bradford County, Florida School System.
Yeah, that was an interesting one, and it's also good that you picked that out, because if there's anything that seems to recur year after year after year, it's some sort of censorship in public schools, And to tell you the truth, these are the ones that I often feel the most ambivalent about, because school teachers, school administrators, they have it so hard because they have to answer to so many different constituencies. You know, they have to answer to parents about concerns about what's being taught to their children, and that's understandable. Parents should be engaged in the educational process. But then if they step over the line as a public institution, then they have to answer to people like us who come in and chat. And this is one of where we just felt that it was just such a question of oversensitivity, and that the school district decided that the Grimm Brothers classic of Little Red Riding Hood was inappropriate for first graders because of one single mention of a bottle of wine. And we just felt that was just going too far to essentially say you can't teach this whole story, can't be involved in first graders because we can't have them exposed to the idea that there's wine in this world.
I mean, and that's part of what the muzzles stand for, right? Is where you go, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, sometimes the awards are, as I said, they're definitely serious awards, but at the
right,
same
the
time,
egregious.
Yeah,
is what
egregious.
You said.
But there are also some that that your first reaction is almost, oh, come on, yeah, are you kidding me? But it's amazing because it really does demonstrate how different people's perceptions are about what is appropriate and what isn't. And to me, that's why we need to have a First Amendment, because the real question it comes down, I think, to me is who does the deciding when you've got so many differences of opinion about what speech has value and what doesn't? Who gets to make those decisions? And oftentimes, I think school officials, and understandably, but it's just not the right decision, they go for the least common denominator, and they're saying, let's avoid all controversy at all, and so we're going to get rid of the thing that might offend one parent out of 100, and that's I think very dangerous, because then that attitude and that position just continues and manifests itself into more serious acts of censorship.
We go to 1993, we find another public school superintendent Larry Zinke of Duval County, Florida, for placing the fairy tale Snow White on a restricted reading list.
Yeah, because it's another fairy tale, it's another public school, and the feeling here was that it should be restricted because Snow White has too much violence in it, according to Larry Zinke's opinion. And this is probably a story that, you know, how many millions of us were read this story or told this story or saw this story in Disney form through the years. So the idea that they weren't already aware of Snow White. But again, I think it's another example of just trying to appeal to avoid having any kind of controversy at all. And you know what? Even first graders or young kids ought to be challenged a little bit in their thinking. And this was just another example where we felt that you're being too sensitive.
Josh Wheeler, our guest today from the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. We're doing the history of the muzzles, which come out on the 20th of this month. Josh is the director. We did the 1992 and the 93, and then once I did 1994, reading through them and picked this one, this is when I realized that the public school system all the time, although this one isn't the funny one. This is where I went, oh, that's your word, egregious. The Bradford County, Florida Board of Education.
Right. It's, you know, this is a good one because I think it also illustrates how long the muzzles have been around and how societal attitudes have changed, because this involved the Miss America 1993. And when apparently, I learned this, that whoever's crowned Miss America can often choose a theme or an issue that they want to emphasize when they go around the country making all of their appearances. Apparently, Lianza Cornette wanted to make AIDS awareness. I thought this was rather, when looking back now, it's really ahead of its time. She wanted to make AIDS awareness. And remember, in the 1980s, we went for a long time denying the existence of AIDS or pretending that it didn't exist. In fact, and rightly, or this isn't a criticism of President Reagan on other issues, but it is possible, it is a criticism of him in this issue. I think it was years into the AIDS environment before he even mentioned the word AIDS. Well, she wanted to mention the word AIDS and talk about it, but the Bradford County School Board forced her to said you cannot use the word AIDS or any reference to it in your presentations to schools in Bradford County, despite the fact that at the time Florida had the third highest number of AIDS cases in the United States.
You know, and there's some, as is often the case with the Muzzle Award winners, some of them you laugh at.
Right.
Some of them you shake your head at.
Right.
And you just say nothing because I have no answer to these. And you just wonder, what are you thinking?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, this particular one, it takes us back to that there was a lot of confusion and fear and ignorance about exactly what AIDS was, but...
And what will we say when we get to 2015 or 2014 and we wonder the same thing to people who also make us say, what were you thinking?
Yeah, yeah.
And again, as I said, I realize now that I'd picked three public school systems in a row, and you mentioned as after the first one, the public school systems are always in the award winners of the Muzzles.
Yeah, it seems that every year there's a public school winner. If there's ever an exception, that's the rarity. But because they are government entities, the First Amendment is a check on their limit to do it. Now, the reality is that the Supreme Court has determined that, you know, there are restrictions on speech that public school administrators can enforce that don't violate the First Amendment. They're saying because of the special circumstances of being in a school trying to maintain order and discipline and also a pedagogical approach, that the school administrators maybe have a little bit better discretion or a little more discretion in limiting speech, and it tolerates restrictions on speech that couldn't exist anywhere else. But having said that, I think the Muzzles, we've always tried to focus on only those ones where we felt that the school administrators went a little too far, and rather than helping the educational environment, probably hurt it a little bit in terms of many of these opportunities we think could present a wonderful teaching opportunity for students. But no, in the cases of the three you've mentioned, and particularly the one refusing to allow AIDS to be even mentioned in a presentation, I think actually does harm not only to free speech, but to society in general.
Again, our guest today, Josh Wheeler from the Thomas Jefferson Center, as we talk about the history of Muzzles, the 2016 Muzzle Awards being released on April 20th here in 2017. Let's skip one since it is 14 after the hour. We're never going to get one from each year listed, but I see one I selected from 1996, CBS Television. I see their name See, they win an award multiple years. So let's pick this one from 1996, about 60 Minutes.
Okay. I'll quickly try to get to this, Ed, because this raises a number of issues. I'm glad you picked this one to discuss, because CBS, what people have to realize, and many don't, that the First Amendment is not a check on all censorship. The First Amendment is only a check on the government's ability to censor us. If there's no government nexus, if there's no link to the government, then there's not a First Amendment issue. However, having said that, our Muzzle Awards, we have never said that they are only for limitations of the First Amendment. We think that there are some private acts of censorship that are so egregious, and often this depends upon the parties involved, that we think that they warrant a Muzzle Award, the dubious distinction of Muzzle Award. And CBS, despite being the network, the news network of Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite, these great heroes of news gathering, has on several occasions just shown really poor judgment. And this was a case in which, and many people may have seen the movie The Insider with Al Pacino and Russell Crowe, which depicts this very situation. And this was when they had a 60 Minutes interview program with a tobacco industry whistleblower who could did want to talk about all the manipulations of the truth and such that the tobacco industry was doing about the harm of cigarette smoking. And yet they threatened to sue CBS television if they broadcast the interview. And CBS basically caved in, not because they thought anything was inaccurate about the interview, but for fear that by having him interview with them, they would be forcing him to violate his confidential provisions with his employment contract with the cigarette industry. And so our feeling was, look, you wrap yourselves in the First Amendment all the time, you know, about being these defenders of First Amendment, about being the press, being the fifth estate. You're out there trying to serve the public good. And yet, when they back down on a fight like this, we thought, you know what? You deserve a muzzle. That you need some more attention brought to the fact that you chose not to fight this fight.
We also have, 1998. The California Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control Board and the district supervisor, David Gill. I like this one because of the muzzle they received, just because of nothing that was done. Not the muzzle, but because nothing was done and they still got a muzzle.
Yeah, it was just the possibility of a muzzle. Yeah, there was there's several muzzles through the years that have dealt with alcoholic beverage control boards. And I guess this all grew out of the fact that at one time in our society, and maybe even we still do, but we merged alcohol consumption and morality together. And so when a lot of these alcoholic beverage boards were first conceived and established, they gave these boards authority not only to determine proper regulations about alcohol, but also authority in terms of deciding, well, is this person or individual or situation of high enough moral caliber to be able to do this? And so that's led to some very strange results. And in this case, they revoked the license of the Palm Springs Convention Center for hosting a convention by the Sensual and Erotic Art Exhibition. And even though no alcohol was being served at the event, and therefore they weren't trying to get it, the center did, of course, serve alcohol at other sorts of events, sporting events, other things like that, but not here. But since they didn't like them but hosting this kind of convention, they said, you know what, we're going to revoke your license for everything.
Oh, my. Yes. I want a thorough muzzle attached to that. I hope they got the extra muzzle with the strong spikes.
A step on it.
On that.
But it's come up several times in some very, very funny kinds of situations. But yeah.
Yeah. The muzzle, the 25-year history here with Josh Wheeler from the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. 20 after the hour. We'll be right back. And back in action on history. Today's our history show, a history lesson with Josh Wheeler. Are you feeling like a professor today, Mr. Wheeler? Professor Wheeler?
No, but it's kind of fun now suddenly to think of myself that way. Thank you.
Yeah. We had a professor on last week. Professor Carolyn Engelhard was here talking about Obamacare and Trump Care and giving us all kinds of in the weeds detail information on what you needed to know about the Affordable Care Act and the American Health Care Act. They're so close in name. They could at least give it a different name so you could tell them apart.
She sounds a lot smarter than I am.
I won't make that comment. Different information. I don't know that she could tell us about the Muslims.
Okay.
So, but let's go forward. We did. So 1999, was this the only muzzle or one of the muzzles? Was that New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani was the recipient of a lifetime muzzle award? Is that the only muzzle?
No. In fact, we gave the first lifetime muzzle award to Mayor Giuliani because he was getting nominated every year and, in fact, had, I think, received two muzzles prior to this. Regardless of how you feel about Mayor Giuliani in terms of his policies, his politics, his reputation as mayor and his accomplishments as mayor, being an advocate for free speech was not one of them, and having a rather sort of strange view of free speech. I think the first muzzle award we gave to him was because there was New York Magazine at the time ran some advertisements, and it said, New York Magazine, possibly the only good thing that Rudy hasn't taken credit for. And, of course, as an advertiser, one of the great places to advertise in New York City is on buses. Well, these buses, of course, are city-owned. And Rudy Giuliani said, I don't want those on my buses, as opposed to thinking that they're really the public's buses. And so he sought to have them banned. He apparently is a little sensitive about being made fun of. Well, it went to court, and sure enough, he lost, saying, no, I'm sorry, you cannot make those sorts of decisions. But that was just the first of many nominations and many situations. And finally, we just said, you know what, we just need to come up with some way to recognize his particular inroads against free speech. And so we came up with the idea of a lifetime muzzle award. And when you go back and look at the record, I think that in his time, there had been about 17, if I can't recall exactly, 17 or 18 major lawsuits brought against him for violations of the First Amendment. And I believe he lost all but three of them, and costing New York City millions of dollars in tax money.
That's a bad batting average.
Yeah, it's not a good batting average. And there are numerous other examples of what he
Tim Tebow's
did.
Hitting better than that.
Yeah, it was not a good average on the First Amendment. In fact, when he learned, this is one of my favorite parts, when he learned that he had been given a lifetime muzzle award, a reporter in a press conference asked him about it, and he was aware of it, and he called the Thomas Jefferson Center here, and this is an exact quote because I remembered, an out-of-control advocacy organization. And for giving him the muzzle, because he felt for us to presume to award him a muzzle for violations of free speech was just beyond the pale. But I think the courts bear us out on this one.
Well, there are other groups that got advocacy that have gotten lifetime achievements award.
Right.
But we'll come back to that, because one of the things that people have accused the center of is being wingish you're on the left wing, you pick on people and organizations like Giuliani.
Right.
You're because you are First Amendment,
right.
You must be left wing liberals, and of course you're going to pick on Giuliani. But then we go to 2000, and who gets a muzzle but the Clinton administration?
Exactly. I want to stress, the center is nonpartisan. And the muzzles, if you look at the history of the muzzles and look at recipients over the years, you will find an equal number of representatives from the political left and the political right.
Like every presidential administration since you've been giving out muzzles, every presidential administration has received a muzzle.
That's right.
We may not talk about one, each one during this hour, but every presidential administration has received one.
Right. And in fact, there have been, guess what? Two Republican and two Democratic presidential administrations among the four that have existed since 1992 when the muzzles began. And that's absolutely right. And so not just on that issue, but on a whole host of other conservative liberal issues, you will find muzzle awards. And if you look beyond that, you'll also find heroes of free speech on both the political left and the political right. And it's our view that free speech should not be a partisan issue. It really shouldn't be. We should all be in favor of free speech. But it's tough when it comes down to people often have a hard time looking past their own prejudices to recognize, you know what, I don't agree with that speech, but, you know, I recognize they've got the right to say it. And in the political realm, this comes back to the point I was making earlier, that free speech is, the First Amendment is not a check on all censorship. It's a check on government censorship. And so whoever happens to be in power in government, it's their time at the plate. And they're the people who are probably going to commit the most affronts to free speech in that given year. But then you just look at it next year and you'll say, oh, wait a second. Bill Clinton didn't get it this year. You know, George Bush got it this year. Whoa, wait a second. Barack Obama got a muzzle award as well as President Bush Sr. So
let's go to 2000 because I found this one to be troublesome because of it's a very well-known policy, and I don't think that everybody recognized what happened. With the Clinton administration received their muzzle. Do you want to tell everybody?
Sure. Well, basically, they got a muzzle award for their policy of don't ask, don't tell. And if the words for why they might, the explanation for why they might have gotten a muzzle for this are right in the name of the policy. What is don't ask, don't tell? It's saying don't speak about this, don't ask about this, and don't tell anybody about this. It's clearly directed directly at speech. This was all borne out, and this was actually an attempted compromise to get over the ban of gays serving in the military. And what President Clinton's policy tried to do to basically give something to both sides is to say no gays could serve in the military, but they can't talk about their being gay, and their commanding officials can't ask them if they are gay or not. So just serve without any indication one way or the other as to whether you're gay. In other words, don't talk about it. And if there's ever a policy that's purely directed at speech, that's it. That's a compromise that just we don't think took into account the First Amendment or free speech implications of it. We also think it's a mistake. You know, if someone's allowed to serve in the military, you shouldn't put these constraints on them based on their sexual preferences.
You can also go to the Thomas Jefferson Center website, tjcenter.org.
Correct.
You can look up the history of the muzzles. You can look up the ones that we're talking about. You can look up the other muzzles from years past that I chose not to bring up during this hour. Whether there's two or three or four or nine others given out during the year. The greater details of the ones that we are talking about, the 2000 Clinton administration issue. So go to tjcenter.org and read more about them. Josh Wheeler here with us today on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, WPVC. 2001, this one got to me because we talked about whether or not some are silly, some are egregious. This one made me mad and made me
it's
laugh.
Sort of both. It's sort of both,
yes,
isn't it? Yeah.
It was. It made me mad and made me laugh. New Iberia Parish and Louisiana Sheriff's Office received this muzzle.
Well, apparently the sheriff decided upon his own judgment that there was the fact is there was a roller skating rink, and it became a lively gathering place for young people, young teenagers, particularly people who are not old enough to drive. And like a lot of roller rinks, enlivened the playing of contemporary music that these kids were liking at the time, including music by a lot of rap artists. Well, one night there were about several hundred kids there, and for which the organizers had rented a school bus to shuttle them down to the rink and then back. But as the group was leaving, having been told to reboard the bus after the party, a fight broke out. So a call went to the sheriff's office, and several deputies came down, and they intervened between the fights. But then the sheriff went further. He went into the rink, and he ordered it shut down. He said, the whole thing is shut down at once. And then without a search warrant, mind you, he seized about 60 compact discs containing music that had been regularly played at the rink. Well, in addition to the rap music, and this is evidence seized, a scene, evidence of a crime. I'm not exactly sure what the crime was, but as evidence of the crime, in addition to the rap music songs, he seized the disc for the Hokey Pokey, Jingle Bells, the Bossa Nova, and the soundtrack for the Disney film Tarzan. All of the discs that he took, only one carried a parental warning label that, remember, were so popular at the time. Then, 6 days after that, he arrested the owner of the skating rink on charges of contributing to the delinquency of a minor for playing this kind of music. And both were treated rather violently, like violent criminals, handcuffed to a chair for 4 hours and subjected to urine test, all for playing music that they didn't like, that they felt contributed to the delinquency of a minor. All of those charges were subsequently dismissed. But this is just another example about one person imposing their own personal beliefs on what's appropriate speech and what isn't. And when you're a police officer doing that, it's particularly scary. So I think you're right. There are elements of this that you can laugh at. The idea that the Hokey Pokey is contributing to the delinquency of a minor, and at the same time that you find people being arrested, handcuffed to chairs for playing of music, and not because it's too loud, not because of anything, but because you believe it contributes to the delinquency of a minor. That's frightening.
Yeah. Do you ever know, or when you put the information up on the muzzles, you tell the story about why the muzzles were given, as in this case, is there ever a link to greater information, such as this sheriff was voted out, or this sheriff went to jail himself for doing this wrong?
There is. We don't do it as much as we should, because sometimes the consequences to these actions can be years later that the story actually evolves on, and we move on. There's so many potential muzzle candidates for the next year that we're dealing with that we don't always do that. But yes, sometimes we try to give an update to what actually occurred. If there was a lawsuit about it, what was the often the results aren't decided when we award the muzzles in April. But if we have an update on that, we'll try to remember to check back and post it for people's image. But of course, now people are so sophisticated, they can simply update and Google themselves and find out what the ultimate resolution of the incident was.
Again, our guest today, Josh Wheeler from the Thomas Jefferson Center for Free Expression. The Muzzles 2016 awards being given out now that 2016 is over, being given out in 2017 on April 20th, 35 minutes after the hour here with Josh. Josh, so how are they selected? I mean, is it all everybody sending in their, you know, here, check this out, read this article, here's my link, here's what happened to me.
We get nominations in a variety of ways. One, exactly as you described, people will submit nominations to us. But there's also a lot of research we do on our part, following press reports, information we get from other organizations that are involved in the free speech business, as it will. But this has really changed over the life of the Muzzles, too, because what's really developed in the last 25 years? Well, the Internet. We didn't really have the Internet when these first began, and that might be why you saw only five finalists. We did a lot of research. We still have a large number of Muzzle candidates just from reading newspapers, from people writing to us, that sort of thing, but nowhere like we have now. We might have had anywhere from 80 to 100 nominations. Well, now we have probably, at any given year, you know, north of 300 nominations that we either get because we are on mailing list and we have news alerts for particular things, so they automatically come to us, but also in terms of people being able to submit Muzzle to us via, you know, email and things like that. So we have a whole lot of candidates. Now, not all of them are valid. And, you know, as we go through them, we'll discover that either, well, we don't think that's Muzzle worthy, or the facts are highly questionable. But the other great thing about the Internet is it allows us to do a great deal of research so that we are absolutely confident that we have the facts straight. And that's one thing we're really proud of, that we do. We've never been challenged on the facts of our Muzzle Awards. One of the ways we do that, and you might find this kind of fun, is that when we do narrow it down to, say, the 20 or so, and we've basically gotten to where we want to give about 10 Muzzles a year. That just seems to be the right number. We've given as few as five and as many, I think it's 14 or 15. And for various reasons, that just is either too much or too little and don't really give an accurate representation of free speech out there. So we've sort of settled on around 10, give or take one or two. But we will write to the potential recipients, and we will say to them, you've been nominated for this award. Here's a news article that on why you've been nominated, but we want to hear your side of the story. What facts are incorrect? What are we getting wrong? And not all of them will respond, but probably about half do every year. And it does sometimes eliminate some of them from consideration. Either it exonerates them, or at least it mitigates the facts that we think, well, we're not sure of this, or maybe it wasn't that bad. But every year, there are always a few that will start off, the letter says, I am a firm believer in the free speech. I don't believe in censorship in any form. However, and then they just start digging the hole deeper. They start going on to saying why they felt justified in censoring the speech of these students or these people or this group. And it's almost as if they're helping us confirm the facts of the case, because they're basically presenting all the reasons why they deserve a Muzzle.
39 minutes after the hour with our guest today, Josh Wheeler from the Thomas Jefferson Center for Free Expression. Let me know if you ever want somebody, if you need a resident on your board to just help weed through, and you get down to the 20. I don't know if I ever want to do any of the dirt work, but if you want somebody with the 20 to go through, just let me know. We'll be back in just a moment to keep going through our history of the Muzzles. And thank you so much for being here with us today. 94.7 WPVC. Sunday morning wake-up call. Rick Moore, Josh Wheeler. A little bit of history of the Muzzles. Free speech. Your First Amendment right from the government. If only you could have that from, I don't know, your grandmother, your partner, your wife, whomever. Let's do another historical muzzle. 2003, because high school graduations are coming up soon. 2003, the Whiting, Indiana High School Administration received a muzzle.
Right. This is actually, we get nominations almost every year for this issue, and that is when the school valedictorian, who at most graduation ceremonies is invited to give a speech, but for one reason or another, the administration doesn't like what they have to say in the speech, and they actually do something to punish the student. So what the school, most schools have done is develop a policy that we have to approve your speech beforehand.
When did that start?
I don't know.
And what made it start?
I don't know.
What is it called? Zero, what does it start?
Zero tolerance?
Zero, no, not zero tolerance. Who's the person who started the virus?
I don't know. But yeah, what is that? The name? It's something zero.
Patient zero. Who's patient zero?
I wish I knew, because they deserved a lifetime muzzle. But it has become this regular part of the routine that students, valedictorians, have to submit their speech in advance to get it approved, and then it goes gets that now gives school authorities a reason to punish them if, in fact, the school valedictorian departs from that speech in any way. They can say, oh, it's not so much the content that we are threatening, we are punishing you for. It's the fact that you didn't follow the rules. This is just, you know, it's one of those times, I'll tell you the truth. So many muzzles, in terms of particularly the sort of more amusing ones or the ridiculous ones, it's like you might understand why the school official or somebody did this just to avoid the controversy. But you know what? What I want to tell them is just let it go. Just let it go, and it will be a tiny, tiny little blip, and it will be forgotten tomorrow. But, boy, by making an act of attempting to censor it, you blow it up off into national proportions, national media, and just get yourself in a whole lot more hot water. And these are the kind of examples of this. And in this case, the student put together a very sort of funny and satirical valedictorian speech in which she said, teachers have always been giving us awards, and I say that turnabout is fair play. So I will now present with much gratitude and affection awards to the teachers to whom we owe so much. She then proceeded to call 13 teachers and present them with such imaginary awards as Trapped in the 80s, Sesame Street Critic, Shakespearean Oculist of the Year. And then the final one was Pain in the Asymptote. And the last one, I have to admit, I had to look up what that was. And it's a mathematical term, and the award was given to the math teacher. You know, it's a very technical mathematical term. Nothing offensive in any of this.
Right. According to the, if you go on the tjcenter.org site, and read in more detail about it, it says that the teachers were all pleased and
flattered
laughing about it. Right.
That's right. And it was
none of them were mean.
No, none of them. And I guess painted the last one because it sort of had a part of the word could have been seen as being offensive speech, which.
And if you
even
didn't know the math term.
Yeah, you didn't know the math term, you're sort of questioning it. But it was done with great humor. Apparently it was well received by the audience
but it wasn't in the pre-approved.
No, it was not. And that's why they did what they did, which is they refused to give her graduation diploma, her diploma at that point, as a way of sort of trying to punish her. And if I remember correctly, she was given her diploma at a later date, but she was unable to share in that experience with anybody else.
I think it said they handed her a note,
yeah, note
when she crossed the stage.
Yes, saying, we want to talk to you about this. Because apparently that's after that day, they wouldn't have any more authority or anything to hold over her. And so they accept by doing this, they could hold over the giving her of her diploma. And this is just an example of, I think it's just power hungry. You violated my rule, and therefore we're going to give you a muzzle.
And that's what we're talking about today. The muzzles from the Thomas Jefferson Center for the
Protection of free expression.
All I could think of was power.
That's for the power of free expression. It's the longest nonprofit name, and sometimes I have trouble remembering
it. We were talking about power, and so all I wanted to say was for the power of free expression, which is also a good thing.
That's a good name.
Yes, you should put that on your card and hand that out every once in a while with Josh Wheeler here. It's 46 minutes after the hour. You know, let's go local, though. People might be surprised if you weren't aware, you didn't follow the muzzles, or maybe you're on the newer end of your time in Charlottesville and Albemarle County. 2004, a muzzle was given to the Albemarle County School Board.
That's right. Well, and this all involved an incident, if you want to call it that, in Albemarle County. County sixth grader attended a weekend camp that was sponsored by the National Rifle Association. And among the topics at the shooting camp, in addition to how to properly operate a rifle, was a great deal of emphasis on gun safety. Now, whether you like or dislike the NRA or the Second Amendment and those sorts of things, the fact of the matter is it is a constitutional right, and the NRA, this isn't a political kind of thing they were doing. They were emphasizing gun safety. I think we can all agree that that's probably a good thing.
It was also 12 years ago, so a little less. The NRA has changed in the last 12 years, I would say.
Well, they were pretty political at the time,
too. I think everything has become a little more divisive.
Yeah. That's true.
In fact, that this, I think if you read about it in the details of the TJ Center muzzles page, there wasn't anything in the Albemarle County School Board clothing policy that you couldn't wear this to school.
Something like this. That's absolutely right. And as a souvenir of this student's experience at the camp, he got a T-shirt which depicted three silhouettes of men holding firearms, you know, superimposed on the letters NRA. But they weren't real people. They were just sort of almost shadow-like in the NRA, and they weren't holding it any kind of violent. It was obvious that they sort of almost target shooting kind of practice. And positioned above that was the phrase shooting sports camp, NRA shooting sports camp. So he wore the T-shirt to school, but during the lunch period, an assistant principal approached him and gave him the choice of removing the shirt or wearing it inside out. He chose the latter, and because he didn't want to get in trouble, but then upon thinking about it, even though there was nothing in the school dress code policy that prohibited it, it was the assistant principal's opinion that the shirt was inappropriate for middle school because it depicted a weapon. And there is sort of a general thing about you can't wear inappropriate clothing. The shirt hadn't elicited any response from any other students. This was strictly the administration of the school board making a quick judgment that any kind of weapon is inappropriate. By the way, what we would wanted to advise, and at the time I think we pointed it out, if you want to look up at the emblem for the Virginia seal that's positioned on the Virginia flag that is run on display at every public high school, you will notice there's a Trojan woman standing on top of a now defeated, killed. Violence with one foot on top of it and a spear in her hand. So there are weapon displays at the school. That case, I think, eventually was litigated, and it was eventually, I think, settled out of the court with the young man getting a nice settlement.
again, Josh Wheeler here. So, I mean, people often think about, when we talked about at the very beginning of the hour, public schools, and we can make fun of public schools in Florida. We mentioned them several times, and we can often talk about, oh, those, you know, country schools. This is less than 5 minutes down the road from the radio station.
Right, this particular one. And if you look over, there have been a number of Virginia-based muzzle awards in the past, ranging from the Virginia General Assembly to other school districts and sorts of things that they've done. So yeah, we can't laugh at these and think, oh, those hicks in other states are those people who aren't constitutionally aware of these things. No, the muzzle awards seem to have validity regardless of geographic boundaries, regardless of political persuasion. They seem to just permeate all across society.
51 after the hour. So we talked about how there were lifetime muzzles given to a couple organizations. We gave one to Rudolf Giuliani.
Right.
But Rudolf there were Giuliani. Others that were given.
Well, we gave one to... I think there have been three total. One, again, talking about homegrown muzzles, one was to lifetime muzzle to the Virginia Department of Corrections. And again, it was just because, to a certain extent, we just got tired of handing them out to them, because every year they come up with some crazy policy, you know, in terms of limiting what kind of information prisoners can have. Now, I understand. I'm all in favor. If there are things that can cause a disruption in the prison environment that can lead to perhaps violence against guards or anything like that, I understand that. And I also understand, you know, you're in prison often for a reason. And so you're obviously going to have some of your rights taken away, like freedom, for example. But it's just ridiculous, particularly when some of these restrictions are actually on prisoners that are trying to improve themselves. For example, there's one ban that they tried to prevent a book that taught prisoners how to learn their particular rights. Help them with appeals or things like that. Well, come on. this is what their rights are. They should be allowed to read this sort of thing. Their bans on the kind of disc that they could, musical disc that they could have, and just sort of silly restrictions. But the other one, and I won't say, I'll be very careful on how to state this because of where I'm sitting, is the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, and their restrictions on the content of what broadcast television stations say and radio stations have to say. And our view is this: over time, the FCC decisions of what is appropriate or what is indecent or not is just so arbitrary that you guys, people like you, have such a hard time determining what it is you can say and what you can't say. And this all kind of goes back to a great case, actually, that we lost, not we, but that free speech lost, involving a radio station that played a comic routine of George Carlin, who I think is one of the all-time great satirists of American comedy. And he did a routine that many people know, seven words you can't say on television. And he, in the course of this routine, even though some of the words are offensive, granted offensive, he just points out, it shows the absurdity of defining certain words that can't be said in any context. And that case was decided, I think, in the early 80s. And it is his routine is just as timely today as it was then. And when we gave them the award, it was as a result of a new policy. And that's the other problem. They often change their policies, the FCC. But they a new policy about where they were saying any kind of profanity, regardless of context, is going to be deemed indecent and therefore finable. Well, at the time, ABC Television was going had planned to broadcast the movie Saving Private Ryan. And if you remember the incredible scene at the beginning of Saving, where the storming of the beaches in Normandy on D-Day, you know, there was quite a bit of a profanity, which I think not, I wasn't there, but my guess is that it was probably fairly accurate that the guys storming the beaches in Normandy weren't going, oh, darn, our shoot, those Germans are getting at us, that they probably were using some pretty lively language. But about, I think, 300 television stations refused to broadcast it because they were scared that if they broadcast it, they would get fined for that kind of profanity on television.
All right, Josh. It's not quite 57 minutes after the hour. So we have 2 minutes left. The awards are coming out on the 20th. Is there any chance we can have just a little early release of what the muzzle award would be?
Absolutely not. I have a feeling. I will say this, though. Remember what I was saying about actual fact. Well, let me give you another example of this that occurred one time. Somebody once wanted to give a muzzle to Charlton Heston.
Yes.
Because years ago, he led... asked for an economic boycott of record stores that sold a song by Ice-T called Cop Killer. And he advocated, look, let's not buy anything from these stores because they're selling this song, which we think is harmful. And people were going, oh, that's a violation of First Amendment. Well, first, it's not a violation of the First Amendment because there's no government action. And second, I'd point out, why isn't it Charlton Heston's First Amendment right to argue this kind of thing? I mean, we're always saying that the answer to speech you don't like is more speech. And he was advocating a way of dealing with this. He wasn't saying the law should come in and not do this. That's a long way of my saying that I know that a lot of people are going to be thinking with certainty that there are certain people, high up officials, that should be getting awards. But if you really look at what they've done, they really only said it without actually carrying it into any kind of action. And so there might be some surprises, but not so much about who gets it, but who doesn't get it.
So, but if all of our previous presidents have received one, is it fair to expect, even though we may not know the specific reason for receiving it, that a candidate or president might be on the list?
It would certainly be understandable that you would set that, but it wouldn't certainly guarantee it. In for this reason, although every presidency has received a muzzle award prior to now, not every president received it in their first year of presidency.
They have four or eight years in which to really.
Several of them have earned several muzzles, and I think you might want to. I will go so far to say this. I think our current president has made a number of statements which do not inspire a great deal of. It did not inspire belief that he has a strong belief in First Amendment principles, but if you look at that, a lot of them are just statements. It hasn't been carried into actual formal action yet. But
Josh Wheeler from the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. The muzzle's out on the 20th. If you're listening today, if this is afterwards, you can always click on the link to go check out the recent muzzles and the history of the muzzles. Josh, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Rick. It's always a pleasure.
Great. Take care.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.